are listening to The Caregivers with Lon Kiefer.
Hey there. Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You might be a caregiver. Hey, I don't know. You might not even know. Welcome home to the Caregivers Podcast, where you're never alone. Thank you for being here, and hopefully this podcast is giving you reason to stay and to say thank you for caring. My name is Lon Kiefer, and I am a caregiver. In fact, I'm widely known as Doc, the defender of caregivers, and I'm proud to be your host on the Caregivers Podcast. For those of you that don't know what we're doing here, we're talking to the caregivers of the world, whether they be professional or personal family caregivers, in an effort to make certain no one is ever alone on their caregiver's journey, even if your companion is just a voice on a podcast. Okay, here we go. This episode and this guest was so much fun, we thought we would do it twice. You'll see what I mean in the first few minutes of the podcast once we get going and I introduce our guest. Also, we thought it would be a good idea to do the podcast live at a coffee shop. About halfway in, you'll hear some interference from a gentleman who decided to sit down near us and have a loud conversation. How rude, right? You know, to have a private conversation in a public area, then again, what about having a podcast in a public place? Oh, well, we're just trying to do the best we can to tell these stories. Some of them are on the phone. Some of them are in a local coffee shop. Luckily, my guest was a professional and kept her cool and not only kept going with the podcast, she also kept waving her hand at me to calm me down myself. She's a true caregiver in many ways, and her name is Pamela Renee Whitmore Yernaway. Pam, good morning, and thank you so much for doing this again.
Good morning, and you're welcome again.
Yeah, confession is good for the soul. So,
Go ahead, make your confession.
Yeah, so we did this podcast, folks. We did this great podcast with great effort. Last time we tried to do this, we had a lot of interference with street corner. We're at a coffee shop. What's the name of the coffee shop?
Baltimore Tea and Coffee in Town Center in Annapolis.
There you go. There you go. So last time we tried to do this, the what were they doing? Watering plants?
They were watering plants. They were weed eating.
And then we waited that out, and then they were power washing what are those? Is that a condo?
Oh, that's right. The condos across. Yes. They were power washing the balconies.
They were power washing the balconies. So we moved inside, and then that evening, I promptly dumped the file because I'm not that good of a podcaster back then, but things have changed.
In a month? 2 months?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Still not that good of a podcaster, but I'm hopefully better with the file. So, all right, we're already off on... Well, we're off on the right foot because this is you and me sharing our story. It's not us trying to stick to an outline, but
exactly.
This is how I try and start the podcast. Pam, please honor yourself before you share with others. Tell us whatever is important to you for us to know, caregiver or personal related or what have you, and then we'll get into your children repopulating the entire world.
They are repopulating the earth. That's probably what's important to me. But besides that, caregiving and professionally, it all ties in together. I have been in geriatric health care for over 22 years, in long-term care, rehab, assisted living facilities, used to run those, and then in-home care. So it's just always been a part of my life. I started volunteering in nursing homes when I was 9 years old. So I've either worked or volunteered. And I used to volunteer for hospice.
Yeah.
So I used to sit with people that were passing that didn't have anybody.
And now you're currently working in the home health industry.
I am in the home health industry, and I work for Home Instead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And please feel free to plug them, because I believe a great deal in you. And we met at Mary Chapin's Anne Arundel County Caregivers Conference. Probably... We struggled with this before, and I didn't validate it. I'd say 5 years.
5 or 6 years ago. It was when they held it just down the road from here at the Doubletree, I think.
And I did it again with her group in, I don't even know when it was.
Not last year, the year before?
No, just this year.
Oh, this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just got an email reminder from her that her, I'm going to look at it while we talk. I'm not being rude. This is for the podcast. It's Monday night is the Dementia Live workshop.
Oh, have you been to those?
Well, not with Mary and Anna Ruggle, but I've done virtual dementia before.
Okay.
So I'm very excited.
That hers is really good. I actually sent a couple people from my office to that, and it was a great experience for them. So,
oh, it's eye opening. People cry.
Yes.
It's very enlightening, and it's very I think it's intended to be. It's not intended to be anything other than experiential, but it ends up being very disorienting. I remember I came out of it feeling so stressed.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to figure it all out, and it's designed so that you kind of can't.
Exactly. And we actually, since we're speaking about that, we do a little bit of a piece of that training with our care staff on their first day of orientation and training with us, just so they can experience the frustration.
Mm-hmm.
For
sure.
That's really what it is, of what other people are going through, just to bring to make them a little more empathetic about what older adults go through. They can't see. If you're asking them to do something and they have dementia, they can't understand three directions at one time.
Oh, absolutely.
So,
and this is by no means a correction, because you don't even have to have dementia. It's
that's true.
Don't take it like it was a correction. It wasn't. But I mean, I see your glasses sitting there, and I left mine in the car. But when I go from...
I'll share them with you.
Are they just basically making things bigger? That's
they're 175s. I'll admit it.
I don't hardly do anything with my prescription glasses. I just get magnifiers. But I mean, that's alone very disorienting when I'm trying to... when I have to quickly rely on something printed or it's on the screen and I can't see them the same. And then you throw in there, the other challenges. But there's a saying in the world of dementia that they're not giving you a hard time; they're having a hard time.
Exactly.
And that perspective can really get locked in through the experience. I know in the long-term care, skilled nursing side of things, it's mandatory in Maryland that everybody that works in a nursing home receives 8 hours of specific dementia training above and beyond any other training that they've had. So anyway, I don't mean to say anyway, like I'm throwing that conversation away, but I want to talk a little bit about you, because the podcast is called The Caregivers, and how you ended up here in the role that you're in. But let's, let's loosen up, get a little bit more comfortable again. You have, three boys.
I do. I have three sons.
400 grandchildren.
I do have 400 grandchildren. No, the fifth one is on its way.
Oh, fifth.
And I do have a stepdaughter. I have a stepdaughter as well. But yes, I have, how many, let's see, one grandson, three granddaughters, and then one grandson is on his way.
And they're all like young.
They're all young. Well, yes. Young to me. Oh, the grandchildren or my children?
I was referring to the grandchildren.
The grandchildren are young. They are, three of them are three. One is 5 months.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
They really are young. Well, and your sons are all over the world periodically?
My sons are all over the world. My oldest son and his family, they are in Pensacola, Florida. He's on the oil rigs. And he started that fairly soon after he got out of the Navy. And then the other two are actively serving in the Navy. One is in Italy, and then one is in down in Virginia, in Norfolk. Now, they were with me for a while in transition, so.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not too far of a stretch when we talk about work-life balance and sandwich generation and that sort of thing. So you're serving in a healthcare industry. You're hiring, training, overseeing caregivers. You're serving family caregivers.
Yeah.
And I know last time we met, I was just so impressed with this downtown area and how you can walk to everything.
It is nice.
You know, I was imagining this tiny little flat, as they would say. And you said, oh, no, you've got a big place because your kids come and go.
They do. They come and go. So I like to have space for them and for... really for the grandbabies. No, I love my children too. But
but if they don't bring the grandchildren, don't bother
don't
coming
come.
By.
Yeah. No, actually, it was funny this morning. Just talking about the kids, I had this thing when the boys were little that when they were having a bad day, and sometimes you could just tell when they got in the car, and this is from elementary school on up, or if they actually were sharing their bad day with me, I used to say, hey, guess what? In the middle of them doing their venting or whatever, and they'd be like, stop and look at me like, what? And I'm like, I love you. And they would just be like, they would always say they love me back, but they were, yeah. It would just make them stop and think. And so this morning I had mentioned I was talking to my son in Italy on FaceTime, mm-hmm. and I had talked to my oldest son and my middle son through Messenger, which technology is wonderful now, but mm-hmm. I sent it out to all of them. I'm like, hey, guess what? Only my oldest son wrote back and said, I love you too, before I even said, I love you.
Nice.
The other, my youngest son was like, what? And I'm like, what do you mean, what? What are you supposed to say when I say that?
Yeah, it's funny. When I talk to my mom now, first of all, I hate FaceTime. You know why I hate FaceTime?
Why? Because are you vain?
Am I vain?
Yeah.
Oh, well, are you getting what I'm getting? Yeah, when I'm looking at you, I don't want to be looking at me. You know, the little picture in the upper right?
Yes.
The whole time I'm trying to focus on my granddaughter, Addison. I am seeing my own ugly mug and double chin and, you know, puffy face looking back at me. And I'm like, I don't like FaceTime. But it's wonderful when you've got
wonderful.
Grandchildren.
It's great when you have grandchildren. It's also great, kind of segueing a little bit, for family members to use
sure.
FaceTime. Any of that, a Skype. We use it when we go into consultations with families, just so that families can be there. But it's also good for families to use with their more and more older adults have either an iPad, their daughters or their sons have gotten them an iPad or an iPhone or what have you. And to be able to, if you're not nearby, to use that mm-hmm. for anybody.
Yeah,
it's a good thing just to check on them, see how they're doing. Plus, when you talk to somebody face to face, it's a little bit nicer.
Yeah, no doubt. It's speaking of which, again, thank you.
I know.
Again
sorry, I keep segueing.
No, that's great. That's what this is all about. I'm being a little bit. What is the term when you're not listening to somebody to listen to them? You're listening to somebody to respond. And part of me is trying to figure out and remember, because we had some wonderful moments in the first podcast, and I want to try and make sure that we get to those. But more importantly, I want to be present in the moment as we do this now. So, and face-to-face is where I was going with this. A lot of the podcasts are ending up being on the phone because I'm talking to people all over the country, which is great.
Yeah.
But I want this one-on-one, face-to-face so you work with people in their homes. You may not specifically go in the home anymore, but your company goes in the homes.
Right.
And this is where the real challenges occur. And
across the board, absolutely.
Yeah.
And when I say across the board, I mean it's just not about taking care of the person that we're going in there to help, but it's also the families.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, it's the daughters or the daughter-in-laws that we work with.
Yeah, in the, for lack of a better term, senior living industry, the avatar of your customer, the person you're serving, is a woman similar to yourself.
Yep.
You know, same age range, kids, grandchildren, parents that may need assistance, what have you. So when you're in the home and you're focusing on your, I do finger quotes, patient.
Right.
In many ways, that's the least of your concerns because, and I know that doesn't sound right, but the bigger concern is what they would call the milieu, the setting, how the caregiver is coping and handling it, because if they're not handling it, none of your care planning or assessments matter.
Exactly. And 9 times out of 10, the reason we get a call is because the main caregiver, the person that's kind of coordinating or holding things together, needs help.
Yeah.
It comes down to that, whether it's the daughter or the spouse. You know, they realize they need help. Usually the person that needs the help, 9 times out of 10, doesn't really want us there. They do want the daughter there. And a lot of times guilt comes into play and they're like, well, I don't want anybody else. I just want you. Well, when you is working and you have a family and you have kids and you're running around and you have a spouse and grandchildren, doesn't leave a lot of time in the day, so you do need an extra pair of hands somewhere to help out.
I want to clarify, when you were saying that, you were meaning that if you're in like a,
a parent's home and the daughter is there helping.
Yes.
You're also there. They want the daughter there, but perhaps not you.
Exactly.
Sometimes the daughter really doesn't want you there either.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes that's true too. In the aspect of,
or if it's
they
the
want us there, right? The daughters
in the daughter's home,
yeah. Yeah. Or, right, exactly. Yeah. And sometimes the daughters know they need help, but there's such guilt that they want us, but they don't want us.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's amazing is that the guilt really, in many times, if first of all, I do a million acronyms. I also talk too much on the podcast. I'm really working on that.
You're doing pretty good today.
I had a review come in that the podcast was wonderful. I wish I had had it when I was blah, blah, blah. I don't remember the specifics.
Yeah.
But one of the comments was, and I love the host's use of humor. The very next thing is, but I'd like to hear from the guest more. And I'm like, I can't be funny and relevant if I don't talk. But anyway...
That's funny.
Guilt, it's an acronym that I give to the world. As far as I know, I came up with it. It's gathering unrealistic, illogical, loathing thoughts. So it starts with a distorted view of the world and your own ability to provide things. But the guilt actually is more about the relationship with the person they're caring for rather than where it occurs.
Right.
A lot of times the industry, whether it's assisted living, independent living, home health, nursing home, what have you, they think it's a turf issue. It's not a turf issue.
Right.
It's a relationship issue.
Yes, absolutely. And so because of that, you're always, whether it's myself going into the home for the first consultation down to our director of care management that coordinates. She's kind of like a geriatric care manager without the title. And then our care staff, I mean, we're all there to help and help them through the process. But it's hard when that guilt comes into play, because sometimes it takes the main caregiver, whoever that may be, a while to come to terms with, this really is helping me, this is a good thing, I can let go a little bit and still be the best person for my spouse or my mom or my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes even better.
We I commend you. I know the last time we got together, you had written long.
I did. I had some wonderful notes, and I forgot them.
No, that's okay. Well, heck, last time I forgot everything. You really helped me out.
I did carry the last one. I think I did.
you without a doubt carried the last podcast.
Truly.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
I'm letting you take the lead this time. Go ahead.
But I'm supposed to talk less. One of the distortions is personalization, where you see yourself as the cause of some negative external event for which, in fact, you are not primarily responsible.
Right.
Personalization is huge in the caregiver world. And I think that when it comes to the very thing we're talking about, this guilt, Family Caregiver Alliance talks about what is the term, where they actually accept their role as a caregiver, and because they think of themselves as a spouse or a family member,
right,
providing caregiver duties,
right,
when in reality they're acting as a caregiver,
yes,
and that's interfering in their family duties.
Yes.
And what I say is that if they can go through this moment where they can become aware of that, they can accept that things need to change and they need help, and they can allow a professional in, they get to then become the family member again.
Exactly. That is, yes, exactly right. I'm glad that's where you went with that, because that's what happens, and that's what we tell families. Let us take this piece off of you so you can be that daughter again, so you can be that spouse, that husband, or that wife again, because that is what happens. And there's a lot of, not just guilt, there's a lot of resentment sometimes that they're now in this position because they never thought they would be that. You know, when we're younger, people teach us, you know, we take classes on how to be parents and, you know, how to be an adult and that sort of thing. Nobody teaches us how to be a caregiver for someone when we're older.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, especially, again, back to women and wives, they're a little resentful. I didn't sign up for this. This is not what I wanted. This is, you know, this wasn't what I expected. I didn't expect to retire and have to take care of my husband that has Parkinson's or dementia or, you know, MS, whatever it may be. And so it's helping them work through that and taking that caregiving, that day-to-day task off of them so they can just enjoy being that spouse or being that daughter or being that son again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I got married since we saw each other last.
I know. That's quite a... Do I want to say feet? No.
For a guy that was single for 20 years before he got remarried, it was a feat. I tell you, I was the
worst. Well, then she is one special woman.
Oh, she is a lucky gal.
She's a lucky gal. I would say you're a lucky man.
I've been enjoying that line as people say, sure. Congratulations, I say in front of Vicky, I say she's a lucky woman. But I was a terrible...
How many bruises do you have on your side?
She's got to know my sense of humor. I was a terrible fiancé or groom or whatever you want to call it because I just did not want all the pomp and circumstance. It was, for me, it was very stressful. I just wanted it simple and easy. And honestly, it was really a wonderful day. I really enjoyed it. But I had to get out of what my own expectations were. And
yes.
I'm not trying to make this be about my marriage, but as you're talking
about...
No,
that's a good point.
Yeah. And yeah. Sometimes even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. But... You know, you're saying you don't realize you're committing to that. It does, you do say sickness and in health and until death do us part.
Yeah.
But when you realize the various ways the sickness can
come
that's
about.
Not even the right term, but it's not what you expect.
Right.
You know,
right.
And
people don't talk about those things. You know, you do talk about when you first, if you're young in your first marriage, you talk about children and finances and where you want to live and things like that. And then as you get older, you talk about retirement and then it kind of just stops. It stops after retirement.
Yeah.
What's the rest of it look like? And that's a good conversation for anybody to start having. I tell family members all the time, they're like, you know, I never expected to be here and, you know, helping my parents with this stuff. And I said, okay, well, the one thing you can take out of this is what are you learning from this?
Yeah.
If you have children, don't do this to your children. Plan, talk about it.
Okay.
Don't keep it hush hush.
You got me one of the places that I wanted to go in this because last time we spoke, you told me about your own advanced directives.
Yes,
and
I do.
Do you remember what you told me?
Yes, that I, well, I know what I told, I'm sure I know what I told you because
it's written down.
It's written down. So I do. I have everything in order, and it may be because it's the profession that I'm in, but I tell all of my friends, just, you know, write it down. I have advanced directives that are official, but I also have a letter that I wrote to my children as to what I want to have happen, even actually to my sisters because I have younger sisters, so just in case they're involved.
Right.
And I describe everything that I want, music, my song, my first song that's going to be played is Let's Call the Whole Thing Off.
Oh, God.
Yeah. That's the first one.
Yeah. You're setting the tone. You better not be sad right now.
Don't be sad. Don't be sad. That's the first one. What is it? It's a Wonderful Life. Is that yes?
Well, I don't know the songs because we didn't talk about that specifically.
No, we didn't. So, but the other thing is,
I'm
getting there. I'm warming everybody up.
Okay. Yeah, you're setting up that.
So the other thing is, I want, you know, most people when they're buried, they just, you could only see from the, you know, from the waist up. I want my shoes to be shown because I have on some cute shoes right now, yes?
Yes,
okay.
You do.
Yeah. So I want my shoes to be shown at my burial, you know, on me. So
and open-toed, right?
With a fresh pedicure.
Yeah.
Somebody better come over from I call it the maintenance shop.
The maintenance shop?
I go to the maintenance shop every 2 weeks.
For your pedicures?
And my nails, yes. So somebody calls me, I say, I'm at the maintenance shop. They're like, what's wrong with your car? Nothing's wrong with my car. It's me. I have to get maintenance done.
So I want my
shoes to be shown, but
you know,
it's important.
Thank you for being that specific and talking that openly about it and with humor because people don't make these plans. And
right, they
one
don't.
Of the people that hasn't made the plans is on this podcast.
Well, you need to. You don't want your children or your spouse or somebody holding the bag.
Believe me, I know. I mean, I tell people this all the time, and then I don't do it myself, which is going to get corrected. I need to say that to you and to whoever's listening to the podcast because a lot of times when we... I did a podcast with a gentleman by the name of Matt Balaker, and he's a comedian that grew up with anyway, he was writing a book, and he knew he would not get finished his book, mm-hmm. Greg Giraldo, A Comedian Story, unless he told the world he was writing a book. So breathing things into the world does help us focus on our commitments.
It does.
Now, here's the crazy twist. The problem in the caregiver world is they breathe into the world things like, you know, you'll never go into a nursing home.
Oh.
You'll never, and to a lesser degree, I'm going to do this myself. I don't need any help. So mm-hmm. we've got to overcome that. I'm driving you back to the distortions here.
Yes.
You told me before you see a lot of these when you're having these conversations. Yeah.
Yeah, and I always tell, you know, I do tell families, you know, we do workshops and stuff like that as well at companies, and I'm like, don't promise anything that they will never go somewhere. Don't promise I'll never send you to a nursing home. I'll never, because you don't know if that's going to come up, that it has to happen for their safety. And an example, my grandmother had dementia for 11 years. My mom was the primary caregiver, and she had promised my grandfather when he passed away, I'll never send her to a facility. She'll stay with me. But it got to the point, it was a safety hazard, not just for my mom because of the things that were happening in the house, like leaving the gas stove on, lighting things from the gas stove, forgetting how to open up a carton of milk and using a knife. So things like that, it gets to that point. They need one-on-one care all the time.
Mm-hmm.
She was wondering. She was taking the car. They would hide the keys. She would find it. She had an older car. I could start it without the key.
Do what?
Yep. She could start it without.
Is she getting down there, like going in 54
I don't think so. I think something
thing.
Was wrong with the ignition. And she could just turn it, and it would go.
Maybe she had a whole career you didn't know about.
Well, she probably did. She was pretty feisty. But she would find a way. She hawked all these items because she thought she didn't have any more money. So there was just – it was a lot of things. And finally, I was just like, she has to go somewhere. You can't feel guilty about putting her somewhere where she's safe.
Well, the biggest thing that I've heard from people about truly feeling guilty is that the should statements, I should have done this, I should have done that.
Yeah.
But the one that can't be undone is I should have done something sooner before something bad happened.
Right.
Because they can't ever separate themselves from that guilt.
Yep.
And not that bad things don't happen once you accept help or make that decision.
Absolutely.
But at least you... I don't even know if this is a fair way to say it. You have some company in that guilt. You were trying to do something
right,
good, and
right.
Maybe sometimes in healthcare, we talk about the continuum of care, and we don't view anything as being the end of the cycle.
Right.
You know, people go in for a surgery expecting to come out better. They may need a little period of time in rehab.
Right.
After rehab, they go home. Then after home care, they're left alone with family for a period of time. Then they might have a slip and they need some more help, so home care goes back in. None of these are dead end roads.
Exactly. Yeah. And even to just let's include, you know, I mentioned hospice earlier. Even with hospice and palliative care through hospice, that's not the, you know, people are scared of talking with hospice because that's the death sentence. It's not the death sentence. That people come on and off hospice all the time or palliative care all the time. Palliative care just helps them manage symptoms, whether it's from COPD or whatever may be going on with them, just to get it under control, and they come right back off. So I always tell families, look at everything just to get something back under control. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that's the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same with in-home care. That's the same with long-term care, with rehab, even assisted living stays. Sometimes somebody just needs to be in a community. They go to a hospital, they go to rehab, and they're really not ready to come home yet, but their Medicare has run out in the long-term care.
Sure.
An assisted living respite stay can be a little more cost-effective mm-hmm. than staying in the nursing home. Not to... you know, take any business away from
long-term
care.
Trust me, there's plenty for everybody out there. And
that's
facet.
The truth. That is the truth.
But the thing is that there's intricacies to all of this.
Yeah.
And if you have a preconception, you're having unintended consequences because sometimes decisions that are financial push you in a certain direction.
Yes.
And if you're closed to those, you're harming yourself doubly, triply, because now you've got the stress of finances as well.
Yep.
Yada, yada, yada. So I'm going to shift a bit here.
Okay.
Back to the personal about you.
It's my favorite part. No, I'm joking.
Let's do a little maintenance.
Oh, right.
No, I'm kidding. You're fine. You don't need my help. But I will make an observation. You're an accomplished woman. You'd be successful in just about any career endeavor that you pursue. And on the
Thank
last
you.
Podcast, well, you're welcome. We talked about some of the journey that you went on, different settings that you were in.
Yep.
Most of them were, if I remember correctly, healthcare related.
Yes.
But you had different roles within. In the time
That's
I've
right.
known you,
yeah.
you were doing kind of marketing and business development.
That's
and
right.
now you've morphed into more management and training.
Right.
But why healthcare? I mean,
right.
I think I know the answer, but you could have worked in any industry.
Right. Well, you know what? I always think about that. Why am I where I'm at? And I think I just go back to
or
where I started.
How the hell did this happen?
Right. I'm going to be 49. What? And my, you know, it's so funny. I'm going to kind of revert, and then I'll go back to what you asked. But, you know, all my children, they're like, you know, I don't. All the, from the time they were a senior in high school, even up till just recently, and still a couple still are like, well, what do I want to be when I grow up? And I'm like, you just got to do something that makes you happy. And I know everybody says that it's kind of cliche, but you got to find out where your passion is. And I said, and it may not be, you know, you may start in one place and go to another. You may have three different types of careers.
Yeah.
It may not all be in one. And then they say that to me. They're like, well, you've always been in this. And I'm like, I'm one of the very few that have all, you know, that this is, I started volunteering when I was 9, and for whatever reason, I think I told you that story, didn't I, in the nursing home?
Yes.
So
how
9 years,
having
yes.
to scold a,
yeah.
I had,
an adult.
Yeah.
I didn't really scold, but I did ask for help. So I was with my church, and I,
memories
so
are imperfect.
Yeah, memories are imperfect, but well, this one's pretty good.
No, I mean my version of your experience. Let me back off. I talk too much.
So we were went with my church, went to the nursing home. I think we went like once a month to go visit the nursing home that actually my grandmother ended up being in.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. So we were in there, and we all got paired off. So it was two people to every, you know, room we were visiting. And so we were in... Myself and this other little girl were in this room. I don't even know remember who she was, but the older lady had dementia, was in a wheelchair, and she was just kind of yelling out. Sometimes that happens, you know, with people with dementia. They want to go home when they say,
sure.
help me,
sure,
that sort
sure.
of thing. And she was doing that. Well, she happened to grab the little girl's arm that was with me, and she wouldn't let her go. So I was like, walked out, and the lady's yelling, the little girl's screaming, and I walk out into the hallway, and I'm like, excuse me, please, I need some help. So that kind of that yeah. memory stayed with me, and I think that's where I, you know, God puts you in the right places at sometimes, and I think that's what He did to me, and that's why I'm where I'm at.
Yeah,
I love what I do. I love helping people.
Well, the nice thing about working in healthcare in general, I talked mm-hmm. earlier about a continuum of care for
yes.
the people that we serve, but for the people that we employ and
yes.
work with and serve with. There's a myriad of opportunities,
there
and
are.
The same personality, that desire to serve others, can play itself out in any number of ways.
And I am so glad. I'm gonna cut you off a little bit. Sorry.
Please, somebody.
No,
got
and I'm
to.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm also in workforce development.
Yeah.
I run a group for Anne Arundel County and called Geriatric Partnership Healthcare Group, and
right.
but. The reason I like doing that and the reason I like where I am is I started in one place. I started, kind of at the bottom. I did payroll. I did a little bit of HR. I was always in the business office role.
Right, right.
But I started at the bottom and just over time worked my way up to where I'm at now. And I want other people to see that. I want them to see you can start at this point, and depending on what you want to do, there's always a career path.
Yeah, and
even in healthcare, if you're on the direct care side, if you start as a caregiver with no experience, and then you work and you get your CNA license, and then you just keep plugging away and become a nurse, and then maybe a nurse practitioner, whatever it may be, there's always opportunities.
Yeah, one of the things that I try and talk to people on the professional side of this, with executives that I work with and coach, is the world has changed as far as things like continuing education and what have you. And it used to be, back in my day, once I had my, I have a bachelor's in nursing, and I've been a nurse for a long time, but my master's degree and everything else and most training after that was paid for by an employer.
Right.
A lot of employers don't do that anymore. But even back then, I think it was wrongheaded. They viewed it as, okay, we're going to pay for this course, but you're going to have to stay with us for another year or two.
Right, right.
I don't know why anybody would want to trap somebody. They want to keep giving them more opportunities. I view continuing education as an opportunity to keep someone while they're going through training.
Yes.
And then if there are better opportunities to come, then you keep them longer.
Yeah.
And had a funny conversation, and then we'll get back to what we were talking about, but I don't really know what
that was either.
but I had quite a few events last week. I drove like crazy. I had an event down in Roanoke. I had an event in Baltimore. I had an event in Lake Placid, New York, all in about a four-day period of time.
Okay.
And you can't fly to any of those places very well. I mean, Baltimore, obviously.
Right.
But when I spoke with somebody on the professional side of the industry, they said, I'm loving the podcast. I realize it's about family caregivers, but... And then I talked to somebody else, and they said, your podcast is just about the professionals. So if there's that confusion, I must be doing something right, because it's for everybody.
It is.
And the biggest thing that I would point out is that whether you're being served by the industry or whether you're serving within the industry,
right,
is that we've got to respect the other side of it.
Yes.
We've got to understand, and the point where this started was you having several different roles within this profession.
Right.
But they all had with them this passion or compassion for,
exactly,
for others.
Yeah. And that's where it stems from. To me, you can't be in healthcare without having some sort of passion for the field and wanting to take care of people.
Can't be in it and do a good job. Sure.
Yes, and keeping that balance, because healthcare and serving others, it takes a personal toll on you. I mean, so you have to be able to be that empath, but also keep that professional and personal boundary up. Otherwise, you will wear yourself out, and that's what happens to caregivers, they wear themselves out because they care so much, whether you're doing it personally or professionally. Professionally, at least you have other support that can help you keep it in line. I know with our care staff, if we start hearing somebody's that's bubbly and personable and on the phone, they're all of a sudden they're not, or they're now all of a sudden they're a few minutes late and they've always been on time, we kind of like say time out. We need you to come in and talk to us because something's going on. You're either getting burned out, something's going on in your personal life, and you need a little bit of a break. And you need to be able to do that as a not a professional caregiver, is knowing when you're getting burned out and saying, hey, wait a second, I need to take care of me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, keeping tabs on your people out there, it's not just, oh, well, I filled that assignment, that person's going to go see them, so my work is done. It's so much more than that.
It is.
And the challenges are greater because you don't get to see your people every day.
Unless
you monitor them.
Yeah, we're not a community, so we really, phone is our number one way to communicate with them. Yeah. So we have to, really pay attention to their voice and to their actions.
Yeah. Speaking of the phone, I apologize to the listening audience. We're at a
picking
live
up some
coffee
backup
shop, and he said that he's got as much a right to talk on the phone as we
absolutely
have to talk on the podcast. So, disqualifying the positive where you reject positive experiences by insisting they don't count for some reason and maintain a negative belief that is contradicted by your everyday experiences. So I'm not going to disqualify the positive of this podcast.
That's right.
despite the noise in the background. It's funny that there's even a part of me that wants to say, hey, I'm more important than you.
Don't do it. It's okay.
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. So you had talked about work. Are you on the Workforce Development Committee with Mary Chapet right now?
So I run the Workforce committee. And yeah, so who's on that is Anita. I think you know Anita Julien from Economic Development.
No,
no?
I should say yes, but not you.
And then Mary Chappett and her her team D, they're on the board. And then I have Carl Kaczynski. I always mess his name up. Oh my Lord, Kaczynski.
Carl, we're not going to let him listen to the podcast.
No, okay.
But
he's
but
with
what
workforce
this is,
development. So
what this
he's on
is
there.
Is that. These are folks that you're teaching how to be caregivers?
This is not. No. What
oh, it's
this
not.
No. No. What this board does is focuses on workforce, direct workforce in the geriatric healthcare.
But what do you mean by focuses on them?
So we focus on how to get them involved in this industry because there's a lack of interest and lack, I shouldn't say lack, there is a lack of interest in this, in geriatric healthcare, quite honestly. So getting people interested in it, whether it's in high school, vo-tech, or as a second career.
Okay.
So we focus on how do we reach out to those people? How do we promote this field? We look at what are the issues? So is it transportation? Is it childcare? Those types of things, and try to find solutions.
Right, because a lot of the needs that the families have aren't skilled. They don't necessarily need a nurse or even a certified nursing
all.
Assistant. They need a compassionate person.
Right.
And you know, I don't think. Sometimes that there's a lack of interest. There's a lack of understanding of how to be a part of it, and there is a great need for people for a second career, a second approach, a reapproach to things. And this is one of the things that I share when I'm again coaching and speaking on the professional side of it is that staffing is a heck of a challenge. Building a caring team is a heck of a challenge. But people that are second. Careers that maybe started out as in a business office or retail or something like that and have a little bit of maturity that didn't work for them.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
We need to find a way to embrace them into this profession, get them that training, that experience, that understanding of as we started the podcast with the whole experiential training of dementia and you know they've got the heart.
We just the need heart. To They got the
Connect
heart.
The head.
Absolutely. And we work with, so AARP has an preferred employee program. So we work with them. But just getting, you know, just a lot of times I get phone calls from people. It is their second career. They retired. They took care of their family member, their mom or their dad. And now they actually want to continue working in it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'm like, wow, you did this not as a paid person, and now you want to come back and continue it as a paid person. That says a lot.
One of the most amazing experiences that I had, and when I started this Defender of Caregivers things, it went in so many different directions, but and I had to back off of making myself available from a individual standpoint because I can't physically be there.
Mm-hmm.
Two, if they're in a different part of the country, I don't know the resources available to them.
Right.
And three, I got myself into some quite sticky situations where people were asking for advice that I just was not qualified to give.
Yeah.
And but one thing during that really was quite beautiful is that there was, you know, a woman, again, that's the avatar for this.
It is.
But men in caregiving is a big trend right now, by the way. And I've got a future podcast coming up on that.
I like it.
But we couldn't get her out of the house. This was the caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
She had the ability to leave periodically, but she felt like she had to stay. There was no reason that she couldn't leave for a while. She even admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
But she wouldn't go out. I said, go out and, you know, do maintenance. Get your manicure, you know, get your pedicure, what have you. She wouldn't do it. But you know what she would do is that we got her to go and volunteer for someone else as a caregiver. Now, I don't mean front line, but like she was on a food line or something where she was serving others.
Right.
That she would do, but she wouldn't do anything for herself.
Yep. And sometimes that happens. It's funny. That made me think of one of our clients' daughters. Actually, it was a stepdaughter. Her stepdad lived with her Everybody else was, the mom was gone. It was just the two of them. And she realized she needed some help and finally said, okay, I'll do it. She goes, but I don't know what I'm going to do on the first day. And I'm like, well, if the only thing you do is you walk out that door and you sit in your car for the next 3 hours, then that's what you'll do. I said, and then maybe the next time you'll get in your car and you'll actually drive somewhere.
Yeah.
But
well, that was great advice.
Yeah.
You keep that ball rolling in that direction.
Yeah. So sometimes it's, even if it's just going and sitting in your car just to get a little break, you have to recoup.
Well, a lot of times that I can't remember how I've said it before, is that people don't need to, they don't need to be told to take care of themselves. They don't need, they need permission
yes.
to take care of themselves.
Yes.
They need someone, even if it's a, not, even if it's a professional that's not really indoctrinated in their life, they just yes. need somebody to say, this is okay.
Absolutely.
I support what you are about to do.
Yep. And we get that with, with families. They're like, well, I feel so bad or, whatever it may be. And I'm like, it's okay. Or they're like, I feel bad even saying this. I'm like, no, I totally get it. I don't only get it as a professional. I get it as a, on a personal level. I have a mom. I'm fortunate that I have an older sister that is able to be with her. And she's down in Florida. We all try to support from far away. I have four sisters. One's with my mom most of the time, with her husband. And then my other three sisters and myself, we do what we can because we
sure.
all live in another state.
Sure.
But, it's you do need permission sometimes just to say, it's okay.
Well,
you do what you can do.
Absolutely. And family hierarchy is often difficult to understand.
I think that's a whole podcast.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and figuring it out quickly on the professional side is very important.
It
but
is.
It is another podcast. But some families are geographically structured. Some families are hierarchical based on the eldest child.
Yes.
Sounds like your eldest is also geographically.
But she is now, yes, absolutely. But we all play different roles.
Sure, absolutely.
One person is a medical, actually the medical power of attorney, actually is no longer, my mom chose a family friend, which actually helped out.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
It was. So it was somebody that we grew up with when my mom has had cancer two times. And the second time she had to go in for surgery, she took all of us girls out of the loop for medical and designated one of our very close family friends as the person so that none of us had to be the one to make a call for anything.
Yeah.
So I actually thought that was quite brilliant that she did that. And then there's another one that's financial power of attorney. My point is I see that with a lot of families.
Mm-hmm.
Let everybody take a little piece, whatever they can take, let them take a piece of that. So not one person is doing everything.
That's great advice. I know that I was in that position with my dad where I got the phone call of, should we let him go or are we going to intervene?
Right.
And one thing I want to get out there for everybody is that whatever your role is, you have to play that role and then you have to get back to who you are. That role is not who you are.
Absolutely.
And when that call came for me, I wasn't being asked to make a decision. Fate had made the decision.
Right.
I was just, acknowledging that there it was.
Yep.
And I actually had peace after that.
Yeah.
Because I was already convinced that was the case.
Right.
We should do another podcast about the whole family hierarchy and
there's
how things
like that occur. A lot of dynamics and going on in families and being realistic.
It goes back to the earlier talk about, you want your cute shoes and your
That's right.
pedicure to show, but family, I know my mom called my sisters and I together and said, my mom's doing great, but she called us together and said, hey, this is what's
yep.
happening with my life.
Right.
This is your role in it. And
I love
that. We're like, okay, Mom.
That's right. Well, it's funny that you say that because one of the things that I personally believe in is the Death with Dignity Act. That's my own personal opinion. It's not always a popular, but I asked my sons. I said, if that was something that was here in Maryland, which one of you could hand me that, whatever it is I was going to take and needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was being serious when I asked them the question. And my
did they
oldest
all volunteer?
No. Thankfully, I think my feelings would have been hurt. No, I'm joking. My oldest and my youngest said, no way, not doing it.
Yeah.
And my middle son said, no, if that's what you want done, then I'll do it. So there's,
oh, but
you know,
what a beautiful conversation.
Right, exactly. Have the conversation, even if you feel like it's tough, because it's not that my middle son wants to take me out.
No, but hey.
But he knows that that's my wish, then he's going to follow through with it. And I respect the other two knowing that, you know, it's just they couldn't do it because they couldn't live with it.
Yeah, that I can't tell you how healthy conversation that is, because people don't realize. I mean, I'm an executor of a few friends' wills,
right.
and I told them, I said, yeah. I will accept the role of being an executive of your will, mm-hmm. if you'll accept the role of being an executor of mine, and I hope I die before you. I mean, these
yes.
are really, I mean, we're joking yeah. about this, but these are very, very tough things to do, and we step up for these things without realizing what we're really committing to.
And that is true, too. So, you know, talk about it. Do research, do self-research, look inside yourself. Is this something really that I could do and be okay with it?
And that clarity is so helpful for the person that has to make the decision.
Yeah.
I'm honoring.
Yes.
Now, one caveat, sometimes you can't honor the request.
Right.
I don't
yes.
mean on end of life. I just mm-hmm. mean like I never want this to happen or whatever. There are some promises that you have to break.
Yep, there are.
And I won't go too much deeper into that because I don't want to keep you here all day. Do you want to tell me, I know what you took a little dig at me the last time when I asked you to come up with a you might be a caregiver if statement. It was appropriate.
Oh,
do you remember what that one was?
I said if, oh gosh, it was something about you running late.
Late and being unprepared.
And unprepared.
Yeah, you might be a caregiver if you're a guest on the yes. podcast, but you have to take care of the host or something. I mean,
yeah, I think that's what it was. I didn't have to do that this time, so now I got to come up with something else.
Well, I'll give you a second to come up with that. But, you know, we are at about that time where we're gonna start wrapping that up. And I can't
right.
thank you enough for doing this again. I think there's some pieces from the last one that we didn't touch again, but there's some new territory we covered this time.
Yeah, I think we touched a little bit this time on workforce, which we didn't get to last time, and I think that's an important piece, too, on the professional side of things.
Yeah. Honor yourself now that you've shared with others. Tell us again what you want us to know about, what you know, if we can find you, what is important to you in this world, or don't.
Actually, to find me, you just Google my name and I pop up everywhere under Home Instead and other things. So,
okay. So Home Instead.
Rotarian. What else?
Yeah.
Grandchildren's pictures come up. I mean.
Well, when we post this, I'll let you decide how much you want to promote it for that on Facebook and wherever else.
So.
You want to try a you might be a caregiver if statement, or do
you need
what? Me to stall
this
longer?
Is, no,
I'm
going to
get in trouble with the people that tell me I talk too much.
No. You know what? You might be a caregiver if you're human. If you're alive. Some aspect, you're always a caregiver, whether it's children or family or friends or pets or whatever it may be.
Well, I'm doing I've got the math wrong, but you might be a caregiver if you find out that what you did as a 9-year-old girl serves your family 40 years later.
Well, that's
true. I mean, this is in you. I can't thank you enough for doing this.
Thank you.
You want to do this? I haven't been making everybody do the caregiver's vow, but you did it on the last podcast.
I know. So I like, I like this vow.
Okay. So I'll start and then we'll alternate. The caregiver's vow. Please learn. You think I've never done this.
Back up.
The caregiver's vow. Please learn and repeat after me. I am proud of who and what I am. I am a caregiver.
I am aware that I take satisfaction in pleasing others and that sometimes I overcommit.
I do accept that some things I cannot change and that I am not perfect.
I will allow others to help and join me on my caregiver's journey.
I will honor myself as I care for others.
This is my solemn caregiver's vow.
Pam.
That was good.
You might be a caregiver.
You may be too.
Thank you for caring.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, folks, there you go. We got through another one. Thanks for bearing with us through the background noise. We're doing our best to get a lot of different stories and perspectives here. Again, that means sometimes we'll be on the phone and sometimes we'll be in a public coffee shop. Maybe one day we'll be in a big studio. Who knows? Please go back and listen to the parts of this podcast where we discussed advanced directives, living wills, and difficult family conversations, and start thinking and talking about these things in your own life. I need to do it myself, as I admitted on the podcast, so I want you to hold me accountable to that, and I'll give you guys an update as I fulfill my own promise and commitment, not only to myself, but to those that love me. I can tell you, I've had many families tell me how important it was that they had already had these conversations when the time came for them to make difficult decisions. And on a personal note, while he didn't have the conversation with me directly, my father had these conversations with many others in his life, and it was extremely helpful for me to hear from them what his thoughts were when I was in a position of having to make some tough decisions on my father's behalf. Thanks again for listening to the podcast. Please leave us a 5-star review, or, you know, let me know you think even, you know, let me know if you think I talk too much, because I do. I'm trying to learn to get a good balance and keep things flowing. But most importantly, I hope you're learning from this, and please share this with others that you might think might benefit from these caregiver stories and the Caregivers Podcast itself. Okay, everyone, go out there, do what you do, be good, and honor yourself as you care for others, because you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring. Bye-bye now.